right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, so it's Wildcard Wednesday. So you can get your requests in now. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are also, since we're about to talk about... we are about to talk to an author who wrote a series of essays, and a lot of them include his love of books. We are also going to talk about famous books that people really lie about having read. And then we're going to talk about how real things predicted pop culture, were predicted by pop culture, and much more right here on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, my guest is a writer, lives right here in the Chicago area. His name is Vincent Franconi, and he's written a book called The Soft Lunacy, and we wanted to have him in to talk about that. Vincent, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you're from the Chicagoland area.
I am.
How did you get into writing? Was it something that you always wanted to do?
I think so, yeah. I was just always doing it in high school, but not very seriously. And, I mean, I'm in my upper 40s now, so eventually I figured out how to do it.
Yeah. And so you're, according to a lot of the writing here, you're a voracious reader and you collect books.
I think I am. I definitely collect books. I collect more than I read,
yeah,
like a lot of people. And I think I'm a voracious reader. I think I'm probably as voracious a reader as your average reader, though,
mm-hmm.
Or at least maybe once upon a time what your average reader was, maybe pre-internet.
Did that start as a young age, at a young age for you?
Started in high school. A lot of Stephen King books. I had a teacher who knew that we weren't really going to respond well to Charles Dickens, so he had us read some Stephen King and Pat Conroy and kind of pop novels, and we loved it, of course.
Yeah,
ushered in the harder stuff.
Is that still? I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, I went to high school a long time ago, and grade school. Are the same titles recycled still? The you know, like your Dickens and your Orwell and all that stuff. Is that still the go-to?
To my knowledge, yeah. I have friends who teach in high school and grade school, and they kind of tell me that when they can't, they've watered down the curriculum somewhat. But it's a lot of 1984 Animal Farm, which is great stuff.
Yeah.
House on Mango Street is never going to stop being taught mm-hmm. in classes, I think.
Yeah.
I think they got rid of Dickens finally.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to do the Dickens when I went to school. And yeah.
It's rough stuff.
There are some that we're going to talk about that a little bit later
sure.
on. It was like books that people claim they've read, but they're probably lying, which is not. You actually have an essay in this, and I want to get to your background and everything. You have
sure,
an essay
sure.
in this where you admit that you lived with some people who were Joyce lovers.
Oh, yeah.
I maintain that anyone who tells you that they've gotten through Ulysses is lying. I've tried, and I can't. And anybody's like, oh, yeah, my favorite book is Ulysses. Shut up.
See, I won't say it's my favorite book. I've read it. I'm not lying. But
okay.
I'll tell you that it took me three whacks.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I mean, I tried three times, and yeah. I just at the third time, I'm like, nope.
It's my thing with it was I hated it when I first tried to read it, largely because my roommates were insufferable, and I don't even think that they read Ulysses. I think they read, like a lot of us, I think it's the third chapter that kills everybody. Because the first two are kind of straightforward, and then it just takes this stream
yeah.
of consciousness nosedive.
Yeah.
But they, of course, were really like adamant about projecting that they were big Joyceans. And I couldn't stand it, and I was reading like, you know, Hemingway and Bukowski and Kerouac and kind of like, you know, edgy young man stuff.
Yeah.
Which they were dismissing as light fiction and not like serious.
Oh, man.
So it was very, very, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So I didn't, I think I was resistant to Joyce for years. And then I think it took getting into my 40s and just saying, I'm going to do this slowly. And I'm going to read other books at the same time. I'm going to sort of read like a chapter a week, and it's going to take me a year.
Yeah.
And that's how I did it.
I don't think I can commit, Vincent. I really don't.
Oh, it's quite all right.
But it makes me know. But I love that essay, by the way. Okay, so let's talk about your background.
Sure.
You grew up in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, I grew up in the southwest suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in technically Oak Lawn at Christ Hospital. Lived in Burbank, Worth, Bridgeview, all the suburbs around there
mm-hmm.
until about 93 when I was about 21 years old. And then I moved to the North Side
mm-hmm.
and have been in the North Side ever since.
Yeah. And where'd you go to school?
College or high school?
Well, let's start with high school.
High school, I went to St. Lawrence Catholic School in Burbank, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
All boys.
All boys, yeah.
Ties and Christian Brothers.
By the way, you know, you bring that up. There's a book that I read as a youth. My eighth mm-hmm. grade teacher gave it to me. because I read a lot, and I led the class in book reports. So I had like all the stuff, you know, they put the thing up on the wall with the stars, you know, that go, and I was just miles ahead of everybody else in terms of book reports, because I read like a maniac. Not necessarily always good books, but they were books, and they counted. They all counted. So at the end of the year, right before we graduated in eighth grade, Mrs. Nagel was her name. She gave me a book that literally, in addition, well, Catcher in the Rye is a big one for me, but that changed my life. And you bring up Catholic school. Have you ever read The Chocolate War?
Yeah.
That's
great.
Yeah, Robert Cormier. That's a book that literally sort of changed the way I looked at the world.
Yeah, I forgot about that book.
And it taught me to be cynical, which I think is a good thing.
Sure.
And it taught me to question anything that authority figures or adults said or did. And it just really changed my worldview. And that's a major book in my life.
I should look at that again. It's been years.
It's a great book. It holds up.
It's the Catholic school. They're selling chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to sell calendars. So
you had to do calendars?
Yeah, which I kind of relate to that. And it's terrible because you make your family buy them. And it's a horrible, horrible thing.
It is a great, I mean, now, you know, the book takes place. I went to a public school, and a Lutheran high school, but I'm not Lutheran, even though I went to a Lutheran high school. So the experience of going to a Catholic school, you know, was fascinating to me too, having read that, because it was so foreign to what I experienced, like so completely foreign.
The Catholic school when I went in the 80s is probably different, but it still is weird.
Yeah.
Like my dad went to the same high school I did. He graduated in 66 and he was the first graduating class. And he tells me about like, you know, all the horrible things that went on during his time and how strict it was and violent it was.
Yeah.
And I just I probably would never have survived that.
Yeah.
But there's a watered down version when I went there, which is still not great.
But yeah, so go back to the Chocolate War.
It's
tremendous, and of course it was written at the time of Watergate, so it's an allegory for that and all that stuff. And he ended up writing a few books. Well, he wrote a sequel to The Chocolate War.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but yeah. So anyway, I bring that up. I digress. You go to college? Where'd you go?
Originally Marine Valley Community College in Palos Hills, and then transferred briefly to DePaul University, and then because I just wanted to go to the North Side and get away. And didn't work out there, so I dropped out of college for about 8 years, and then I went to Roosevelt University to get my BA, and then after that, Northwestern for my MA.
Well, geez, you dove right back in.
And I was a terrible student all the way up until I dropped out, and then it took 8 years of working in offices to decide.
I bet.
Maybe I should go back to school, and then I was a straight-A student because I loved it, and I wanted to be there. So
yeah.
I think that makes
a world of difference, man.
Absolutely.
It makes a world of difference.
Being forced to go, I did not want to go.
So writing, you do poetry, you do essays, you write stories. Is there anything that you have a preference to? Is there something that you like more than anything else?
Hard to say. I mean, my head's not in poetry right now. I've been writing a lot of fiction and trying to write short stories this year. And I studied creative writing poetry, and that was sort of what I was supposed to do. And they put you in that track like, okay, you're a poet. But I always kind of wrote a little bit of everything, and I decided to study poetry because I felt it was the thing I was the worst at, and it's hard to write, so I thought, well, I should go to college to study this. I can fake my way through essays and fiction a little bit.
Right.
And then as soon as I got out of college, I immediately started writing more poems that never got – I mean, a couple of them have been picked up in small journals, but like most of the publishing I've done, which is really this book and one before, they've been essays. It's all nonfiction.
Yeah.
So it's just – I think my fate is to sort of go that route.
Yeah. Well, you're good at it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's really compelling, well-written, and funny stuff as well.
I appreciate it.
You also teach.
I do.
How do you juggle that?
Teaching is, I teach freshman comp at Roosevelt. So that's, I mean, my day job. That's my most, most of my effort goes towards that. So I usually try to do the writing during the summertime if I have summers off, which I do. I work like, now I'm working about 2 days a week, which is not bad.
Yeah.
And then just edit for the rest of the year. But Most of the book that's out now, The Soft Lunacy, was probably written during the school year. I was writing at night and maybe neglecting my day job a little bit.
Yeah.
Not writing so many papers as quickly as I
should. Okay. Do you enjoy teaching?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. It's like any job. It's got its issues, of course. But I like it. I like teaching freshman composition, even though it's the job that nobody wants to teach.
Why is that?
Everybody who goes to get an English degree wants to teach literature classes where they can discuss Shakespeare and Joyce and all this stuff and inflict that on students. Although they're English majors, so they should be ready. Even the English majors don't want to read a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But, And then the ones who study creative writing in grad school, like I did, they want to go and teach creative writing so they can teach people how to write like them. If I could be cynical for a sec. So I'm in a weird place where I am teaching freshman comp, which is usually what most people only teach out of necessity because they need a job. And I'm kind of figured out that I like it. I think it's fun. You can really do a lot of things and be creative. You can have students read shorter pieces and then do more writing. You can have them write six different kinds of essays. It's more like talking about what writing is.
Yeah.
It is like, hey, we're going to read this poem and you're going to appreciate it and you're going to sort of respond to it.
How long have you been teaching?
10 years. I adjuncted from 2009 to 2014, and I got my full-time job then.
10 years, huh?
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you much.
All right, we're going to take a break, okay?
Yeah, of course.
When we come back, I want to talk about your first book, Like a Dog.
Great.
And, of course, we want to get to the latest, The Soft Lunacy. So hang on. We've Vincent Franconi is with us, and we're going to come back and talk more with him after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 o'clock. Wildcard Wednesday continues, or will begin in a little bit. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Vincent Franconi is with us. He is the author of The Soft Lunacy, and we're talking about that. We're about to jump into talking about his books. So when Like a Dog is also a series of essays, correct?
Sort of. It's a short book, but it's sort of a trilogy in one package.
Tell me about it.
Well, the first book takes place in the early 90s when I was working a really rotten job as a mail sorter, which is what I did from basically high school till early college.
Mm.
So for about 4 or 5 years, I just sorted mail by zip code all night long.
Oh.
It's a terrible job. It's very blue collar, boring drudgery.
Yeah.
Mostly a lot of young people like me, a couple of older guys in their 50s who are just like, kind of like, you know, very, very beaten down guys. And then like our younger guys, we were just screwed around all day.
Mm.
And then the second part of the book takes place in the 90s when I was working at a used bookstore in Chicago called the Aspidistra. So, and then the last part is when I was adjuncting. So it's kind of a trilogy of bad jobs.
Yeah.
I really liked the last two, but it was the sort of weird things that you do when you work jobs that you can kind of have little management and can get away with doing some terrible things.
When you were writing about that, about those time periods, did you picture it as a trilogy, one book, or was it just, were you just writing and then you saw it shape into that?
Yeah, that. I mean, I started writing the first part of it about being the mail sorter and thought of it as sort of a short story, and then it became longer than a short story, but not quite long enough to be a book. So then I just started tacking on more. I thought, well, what are the other significant jobs I've had in my life that I thought would make a good continuing? And I thought, well, the bookstore is big because there's a lot of good stories about that.
Yeah.
Mostly like drinking beer behind the counter and dealing with like customers and being very rude. And typical, you know, cranky bookstore guys.
Right.
And then the last one, I thought, well, wouldn't it be really great to talk about like what a rough life it is to be an adjunct teacher, because it's a very, very difficult way to make a living.
Yeah. Okay. And now the latest, Soft Lunacy. Where did this one come from?
Started in 2016.
How the book opens. It was a pretty crappy year for you.
It was a bad year, I think, for everybody I talked to.
Well, the Cubs won the World Series. So
that was a weird...
That was the one thing.
We didn't even get to enjoy it for very long.
No, because a week later the world ended.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not to steer this into an overly political chat, but like, we had a few days at...
Yeah.
But so that was that. But I mean, otherwise, like everybody was dying. All the celebrities were dying.
And you had personally, like you lost your dog at the end of 2015.
Right after Christmas.
And right, wow, boy, with the timing on that.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah. So the starting off point is that year.
Mm-hmm.
But you go back and forth in time.
I do.
To write all the essays. What were the choices? Why were these certain stories chosen by you?
Originally, it was just going to be me writing to get through, you know, the grief process of losing a pet, which is rough. And like the book opens where, you know, that's happening. My wife was out of town for a month. So it's just me in my apartment, sort of like, you know, surrounded by a couple of liquor bottles and pizza and looking at all the books and like decided I need to sell all this stuff and move. And every book that I couldn't get rid of kind of felt like it had a story behind it, like a memory attached to it. So that's when I started saying, well, what's the significance of this book? And then like, hey, this is the time when I was in college. I remember picking this up when I was like in this point in my life. So that was originally how it started. And then it sort of morphed into this weird combination of memoir, very light and unacademic literary essays and kind of absurdist vignettes that are in there too. I started to throw a little weird ones. And it's I told my publisher that I don't think I have it in me to write a normal book. I think it's just a slightly abnormal book, but I like it. I'm happy with the book. But it's not like a continuous thread or a narrative. It just kind of took off into its own thing. And it took about a year of after writing it, of hammering it into shape to figure out exactly what it was.
Well, I have a couple of news stories here about how leisure reading in the U.S. is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
And that 24% of American adults haven't read a book in the past year.
Really? Is it that high?
24% of American adults.
Yeah, I think I have read something along those lines, but I don't want to believe it.
What is it about? What do you think? Why do you think that's happening? I mean, a lot of it is because of the smartphones and the and all that other crap that that people, you know, are obsessed with.
I mean, it's that. It's Netflix. It's my own reading has declined, I feel like. I mean, I read a lot. I try to read every day, and I read for pleasure so I can kind of read whatever I want. But I do even feel like my attention is being diverted by Netflix. It's just too seductive.
Yeah.
And the smartphone and all those other things. I mean, I love all that stuff as much as I, you know, rail against it too. But it does kind of dominate right now. And people, my students will tell me, like, you know, there's got to be better ways of learning how to learning about literature than reading books. Can't we watch a video? And it's sort of like, come on.
I mean, oh, man.
When you hear things like that, you're like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do kind of feel like we are in a culture that privileges immediacy, and books don't really give you that. You have to invest.
Do you have a solid opinion on like Kindle and things like that?
Not a fan.
Yeah, me neither.
I just can't really understand the appeal of all of it. I think if people read on that, I'm happy that they're reading. I don't want to say you shouldn't have one, but I could never have one. I don't really think I could read that way. I mentioned this, I think, at one point, but like if I had a Kindle, I wouldn't commit to a book because it's just too many options. It's like I don't commit to a show on cable because I'm channel surfing or looking to see what else is out there. And I think a book would do on a Kindle would do the same thing. I would just think, well, I've got a million other books here at the touch of my fingers. And this one's actually kind of a drag right now. I'm not into this three pages, but maybe if I you know, invested a little bit of effort and attention, it'll pick up, which happens a lot.
Yeah.
Books sometimes take like, you know, they take an hour for you to really feel like,
oh, sure.
What's going on.
Yeah. I just physically like having a book. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these people that likes to have a book in my hand when I'm reading.
Agreed.
I like to smell the books. Mm-hmm. I know that might be weird, but I like that. I just like the physical holding of a book and reading it and turning the pages.
Yeah.
You know, and putting it down if I need to put it down and then picking it back up, that kind of thing. And I know that that's not as popular now as it used to be.
No, it's not. But there's a lot of appeal. I mean, there's aesthetic appeal to having books. I think books can do – I mean, it's how I've decorated my apartment partially. There is weight to that, like you said, you get to see the amount of pages ahead, which I feel is really important for me for some reason. I think if I had a Kindle, I would be too obsessed with how many pages are left, and it would just bug me, and I'd have to keep looking. So I like feeling it and going, okay, and looking at the bookmark and seeing the progress you've made.
Yeah. And it's funny because like when I read a book, I also like to know how many pages I have left, and I'll sprint sometimes. Like if I see how much I book I have left to read, I'm like, I'm going to finish this.
Yeah,
I'm going to finish this. I remember one of my favorite books of all time, which is a book that I've purchased for girlfriends, ex girlfriends, ex wives, friends, relatives, Don DeLillo's Underworld.
Is
one of my favorite books of all time. Way up there. I think it's one of the greatest works of art of the 20th century, and. That's a big one, man.
Oh, it's a huge one. I haven't finished it.
You haven't finished it?
No, I love Don DeLillo, but I don't know. And it's not that I'm disliking that book. But
well, it's like 1,200 pages.
It's pretty long, and it was one of those books that I started and said, oh, I'll finish this, and then just lost track of.
Yeah, we should go back.
I do. Yeah, I have a copy. I know I do.
That's the one I sprinted because I loved it so much, and I was so compelled by it. I remember I spent almost like 2 days like just reading it. To finish it because I was just like I want to finish this, you know, I want to finish this. Sometimes I have the opposite feeling, like I want to save it,
right?
You know what I mean? Like I want to save some of this stuff because I'm enjoying it so much. But first, and I've read Underworld three times, and
wow.
It's an extraordinary piece of work, and I love DeLillo in general. I just think he's phenomenal, but I think Underworld is just a massive achievement. But it's weird because you would think that I'd want to save that one. But I wanted to tear through it.
Yeah.
And that's because I knew how much I had left. And I'm like, oh, this is so good. I want to read more.
That's I really need to go back to that book and finish it.
It's a great one. What are you working on now?
Mostly writing some short stories, enjoying that process.
Do you like writing fiction?
I do. I do. I think it's fun. I don't really get as – I think the reason I like writing prose in general is I don't get as stressed out about it as I used to with poetry, where I felt like it really needs to be perfect and fit and be compelling and every word is important. Whereas like if I have a not-so-amazing line in the middle of a paragraph, so be it. It's got a function. So I feel liberating in a way to write fiction and nonfiction this way.
How do you feel about sharing stuff from your life? I mean, obviously, you feel comfortable about it.
Mixed. I do. But I have written things out. My wife was written out of my first book because she didn't want to be in it. And, you know, a lot of people will say that too. Like, I'll ask people. I'm like, hey, I got a thing and you're in it and you care. And most of the time, they're like, change my name and or something like
that.
The
story stays the same, but you can change the name. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think every person in all the books, that's if they're ever in a relationship with me, they have a fake name.
Okay. Well, The Soft Lunacy is the latest. It's available everywhere. People can get it everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's easiest is through Amazon. A couple stores in town will have it, but I think Amazon's the easiest way to get it if you're not terribly turned off by the idea of using Amazon as opposed to your local bookseller. But if you want to use your local bookseller, you can ask them to order it or stock it.
Okay, great. VincentFranconi.com.
Yes, that's the website.
That's the website. Yeah. People can catch up with you there. It's terrific stuff, man. I mean, you're a really compelling writer.
Oh, I really appreciate
and
that.
And it's really good stuff. And that's called The Soft Lunacy. And is Like a Dog still out there?
That's still out there, too. Order by Amazon. Again, a couple stores still probably have it. Or, you know, go to my website, send me a message, and say, please, I'd love a copy of your book.
All right. It was great meeting you, man. You're a terrific writer.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN.